Thank you for attending. Hi, everyone. Thank you for attending. This is the Subcommittee on Minnesota Water Policy's discussion of possible water policy issues. This is the second meeting like this that we've had. Are you seeing the agenda on the top? Seeing the agenda?
Yes, Jim, it's there.
Okay. All right. So we held a similar meeting in September. That focused on groundwater issues. Today's meeting kind of encompasses everything else, rivers, lakes, and general water policy. Where do these issues come from? Well, they come from others, primarily from legislators, from stakeholders, and from bills that were introduced through the subcommittee at our last session, but which did not move forward. There are a lot of issues today that we're going to discuss, and I really don't have a way to discuss them all in a format that would keep you interested and awake. So I just really want you to be aware of the issues. They're described in detail on our webpage. Hopefully we'll have time for questions, comments, and missing topics. I know some of the advocates for these issues are in the meeting today, and I hope they will say a few words about them. So our time is short. Additional comments about any of these topics would be appreciated to me, either by email, by phone, or in a personal discussion. We're going to send out a short survey tomorrow to help prioritize those issues, and then I hope you'll participate in that survey. So this is the list of things on the table today. And obviously, we can't discuss these in a way that would be helpful with a list this long. So we're gonna kind of parse this out. I'll show you the list. I'll talk about a few of these things. By no means will I go through all of these. So we'll do these in a set of panels. The first one includes the first of the five issues. I'll just be talking about the ones that are in bold, but it gives you a chance to look at least the titles for these and we'll allow you to see if you have interest in them. And I'll describe a few of them on each panel. This one, the first one being number five, which is to complete land management preservation goals for water quality and quantity for the Upper Mississippi River Basin. A comprehensive program is needed to provide policy and plans to protect our waters for future generations. All of these waters interact within the context of the total landscape and are impacted by our land use choices. Healthy lakes enhance our quality of life. They support complex and important food web interactions and provide habitat for fish and wildlife. Lakes contribute to a healthy economy. They're an important draw for tourism, and they provide recreational opportunities for our state's residents. So we need to protect those lakes for the futures. For the future. Unfortunately, some of our land use choices are damaging our lakes and have made them vulnerable to erosion and contamination. We can reduce and reverse these vulnerabilities through planning and land management. There's a good opportunity now to implement conservation programs that are intended to preserve high quality lakes in the Upper Mississippi River watershed. This area also is a source of drinking water for us who live in the Twin Cities Metro. Research by the DNR suggests that protecting 60 to 70% of land in a watershed is sufficient to protect lakes and streams. This can involve keeping private lands working as working forests. The effort could complete the evaluation of progress made in meeting land preservation goals and would assess opportunities and fund efforts to keep forested land from development, particularly in the watersheds of our most important and deep water lakes. It would also define a path forward to attain those goals with additional funding to the DNR through the Forests for the Future program. This would result in reaching the goals needed to preserve our most important lakes, as well as the area that is the source of drinking water for the metropolitan area. Okay. The next panel. Shown here, I'm going to talk just about number six. The sixth issue is keeping water on the land. Agricultural drainage provides many benefits that allows farmers to better access to croplands and to complete farming operations in a timely manner. Without agricultural drainage, increases in soil productivity and crop yields would be difficult and economic returns would be diminished. While drainage of croplands provides benefits, several environmental concerns are associated with this drainage. The installation of agricultural drainage accelerates the transport of water from our fields. There are downstream issues with uncontrolled agricultural drainage, which increases flooding, affects recharge, and can degrade downstream water quality. An increase in funding would advance existing programs at the Board of Water and Soil Resources and at the DNR. The Clean Water Council has proposed $1 million for water storage in southern Minnesota. This bill would strengthen that request and move it on to other areas of the state. The next panel here, I'm just going to talk about number eight, but you can read the other issues. Number eight is appropriations to support fixed costs for watershed districts. This bill would make a change in state statute that will allow a small increase in the general fund allocation to watershed districts, allowing them to keep up with inflation. The amount of this allocation hasn't changed for many years. Next panel here, I'll talk just about number 15. Number 15 involves increased efforts to encourage wastewater and stormwater treatment options. Small towns and cities struggle with the costs associated with maintaining and upgrading water supply and wastewater treatment facilities. We need to support innovative water treatment processes for small cities. As a state, we need to explore ways to encourage and provide funding for new technology as well as alternatives. This could include innovative technology, regional partnerships, improved asset management, coordinated operations, and when appropriate, a process to decentralize utility services. We need to encourage and provide funding for new technology, alternative approaches and opportunities for water supply and wastewater treatment. An assessment and a pilot testing of innovative approaches is needed. And additional funding is needed to the Minnesota Department of Health and to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to explore and facilitate options and opportunities. The Clean Water Council has proposed $200,000 for grants to small communities. This bill would provide additional resources to help increase efficiencies for small towns and cities. The next panel here, I'm going to talk about item number 23. Item number 23 includes long-range water planning. Last session, two water planning bills were introduced. HF 3888 would have appropriated monies for a plan to ensure that Minnesota has an abundant supply of clean water for the next 50 years. House File 4204 proposed an Office of Water Policy to provide research and to evaluate policies and practices relating to groundwater and surface water use, protection, and enhancement, including improved methods for planning and assessing water balances between aquifers and rivers, and proposed methods for securing private and public drinking water supplies by developing a plan for public sources of drinking water. The other bill would have appropriated funds to the University of Minnesota to develop a plan to ensure that the state has an abundant supply of clean water for the next 50 years. The plan would have assessed the current state of Minnesota's waters, identified gaps and recommendations regarding water data, and to provide opportunities to act proactively to ensure that the state has an adequate supply of water for 50 years. Both of these plans had merit and should be considered, I think, together in a planning effort conducted by the University of Minnesota and by the water agencies of the state. I'll talk about three of these in this last panel. The first one is called Stop the Carp. Invasive carp are now in Minnesota and in the Mississippi River. It's important to stop the migration of these fish before they advance farther up into the river systems. By using a combination of three available techniques at lock and dam number 5 near Winona, it's estimated that over 95% of the big head carp could be stopped. This likely would spare Lake Pepin, the St. Croix, and the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers from the invasion of these carp. Carp control could be achieved with little effort with little effect on native fish. A decision for funding the installation of this carp barrier is needed soon in order to stop this invasion. The next one is carbon capture and mine waste rocks. As concentrations of carbon dioxide increase in the atmosphere, attention is now being paid to the benefits of removing and storing carbon in rocks that are common in Minnesota. The USGS has published a comprehensive review of geologic carbon storage and sequestration. Carbon mineralization is the process by which carbon dioxide becomes a solid mineral, such as carbonate. It's a chemical reaction that happens when certain rocks are exposed to carbon dioxide. Carbon mineralization involves exposing carbon dioxide to certain rocks, including basalts. The biggest advantage of carbon mineralization is that carbon cannot, therefore, after escape to the atmosphere. Most of the rocks in Minnesota have potential for carbon mineralization and are in the northern part of the state, igneous and metamorphic rocks common to northern Minnesota. At least one of the proposed mines in the state have expressed interest in carbon capture by using crushed mining waste. State policy, we think, is needed to evaluate that process and to consider whether the state ought to encourage that practice. And the final topic here that I'll talk about is a Keep Our Lakes Clean initiative. Ice fishing on Minnesota lakes has changed, and the winter has become a popular time to recreate on our lakes. Wheeled houses have created a shift in the way people fish. Winter fishing on Lake of the Woods has tripled compared to 20 years ago. Lakes have become recreational vehicle campgrounds. However, there is no rule or services to deal with trash and human waste left behind. Waste left on the lake is becoming more and more of an issue. The Keep It Clean initiative was started on Lake of the Woods after volunteers hauled trailers full of trash following the winter fishing season. Since that time, this initiative seeks solutions to address trash and human waste left in the lake. This year, local stakeholders from Red Lake and Mille Lacs have joined with this initiative, forming the Regional Keep It Clean Committee. The committee is seeking to address the following issues. Local and state changes are in ordinances and laws are needed to make it unlawful to place trash on frozen lakes. Technical and financial support is needed for local infrastructure to assist local communities, and a state agency partnership is needed to provide a statewide program. Currently, it's difficult for conservation officers to issue citations for littering on the ice. The DNR has suggested that amending certain statutes would be a way to address the enforcement issue. Currently, what conservations can enforce is limited. An expansion of the statute would address this issue. The change would allow counties to propose ordinances that the DNR commissioner would need to approve prior to the adoption of the ordinance. This would allow for changes that would be requested locally, approved by the DNR, and if so, enforced through conservation officers. So that's a quick overview of some of these topics. Again, the topics are listed here. You can read narratives of each one of these on our website. Now, I'd like to kind of turn this meeting over to you to see if you have questions, if you want to address some of these issues, and if you would like to just discuss any of them. So I hope we have some, if you'd raise your hands, that would be helpful, and we'd be happy to try to take your questions or hear your ideas on these issues, whether you support them, whether you think they need to be revised, or whether there are other issues that you think are important. So Julius is going to help me see the raised hands. I see Peter's hand raised. I can't see everyone here, but Julius will help me recognize those of you who have your hands raised. Peter.
Thank you, Jim. Apologies for the look. I've had some kind of accident running, so apologies for looking dreadful. The list that you present, for obvious reasons, is a long one, and to some extent a kind of disjointed one. I mean, this is natural from the kind of process that it's gone through. You might recall, though, that back in 2020, and I should say that I'm Peter Kahlo from the Humphrey School, where I'm a specialist in science public policy. In 2020, under a contract with the Department of Health, we developed a report on the future of drinking water within the state. And that had two themes, two major themes, which I think are kind of important in reviewing this kind of legislative list. One is, and this I think is really important in the area of water, drinking water, and that is that we don't have, and this speaks to the large list that looks disjointed, we don't have really a good integrated approach to water policy and drinking water policy. And yet delivering on water and drinking water, recognizing that we have an interactive, interrelated system really demands an integrated approach, especially if we're going to deliver an optimum sort of approach to the management of water from source through to sink, literally. So integration, and that to some extent involves a consideration of the relationship between the agencies. There are more than 8 or 9 agencies involved in water and drinking water policy. Paying attention to that, moving towards a more integrated approach within the agencies, I think is really key to delivering good drinking water and generally water policy. I don't see that kind of issue within this list. I'm sure it's implicit to many of the items, but I think it needs to be more explicit, and I think it needs to take into account the fact that we have a very good system here, but it's a disjointed system from an agency's point of view. And the other theme, which is mentioned in the list, is where is it? that, that there should be more engagement of the stakeholders in management. And this again is part of the kind of story, the need for an integrated, responsive approach that is stakeholder, to some extent, driven. We're not there yet because there are kind of huge technical issues in bringing the stakeholders in a relevant kind of way. But again, I think that needs to be looked at in a very kind of important and urgent way in the development of new policy. So much more integration, and I think that needs to be reflected in the issues that are considered, and much more stakeholder involvement that is real in terms of not just paying lip service to what stakeholders say, but actually responding to it and involving them in serious management issues. Thank you, Jim.
Yes, thank you. And the report that the Humphrey Institute and the Department of Health put together is very informative, and we've considered it before. It actually is, I believe, considered in the 24th item on the list here. We just didn't talk about it today, but I'd be very interested and happy to spend some time going over that topic and incorporating what I've undoubtedly have missed in the short version of those. So it's there, it's important, and I'd be happy to discuss that with you. So thanks for bringing that up. I'll be in touch. Thank you. Elizabeth is the next person I see on the list here.
Hi, Elizabeth Waitful, and I am speaking on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Really appreciate the opportunity to provide some input. For those of you who are not familiar with us, we are more than 100 cities across the state, and our interest in these issues stems largely from our role as folks who handle wastewater, drinking water, and stormwater in much of the state. A couple of brief comments. The one thing that you had on one of your lists but was not highlighted was the Water Commission and the Wastewater Advisory Council. A couple of weeks ago, I met with our environmental committee as we sort of decide our policy approaches and what we want to prioritize for the upcoming session. And biggest thing is actually getting a bonding bill done and getting a whole bunch of money to deal with water issues. But putting that aside, the second thing that that had a lot of resonance for our folks, especially for the wastewater operators that were on the call and the drinking water folks, is they really would like to see this commission and council come back. And so I just, again, would encourage folks to think about that. It doesn't, you know, there's a lot of issues on here that part of me is thinking like, you know, maybe this should be over at LCCMR and get a grant through that, or they got money, you know, in the Clean Water Council, they may not need the help. This is one of those issues that doesn't have a great champion, but is really important to a lot of our cities out there. And I just think it's a low cost way to really sort of help the folks who are doing the on the ground work regarding, you know, drinking water, keeping drinking water clean, wastewater clean, that kind of thing. So I just would like to encourage that. I think there's a lot of other projects on here that we would be supportive of, but that is really sort of one of the ones that sticks out there. So that's what I wanted to comment on, and thank you again.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thanks for your comments. And we had those bills queued up last session. They just didn't move, and we'll work on them again if members are interested. So thank you. And if any of you want to have a conversation with elected members of the subcommittee, that would be really appreciated. Thanks. Thanks for your comments. I see Dr. Baker with his hand raised.
I believe Robin had her hand up.
Okay, great, thank you, Robin.
Well, thank you for the invitation to attending today. Mike Hurst from Lake of the Woods Soil and Water Conservation District met with you earlier and prepared a statement which you read. And so I thank you for reading that out. But I would just like to add that at Upper Red Lake, we are a very small community, but last year we had over 70,000 anglers visit our lake. So the problem of human waste and trash is a real burden to our community because we don't see a lot of revenue from overnight stays in fish houses and wheelhouses, but we deal with the cleanup. The aftermath of that lasts long beyond the ice fishing season. When the snow melts, that waste is washed ashore, and homeowners, cottage owners, businesses, we all have to deal with that. So we're looking for help to, as you mentioned, to provide us with the resources and the infrastructure and the enforcement that has been lacking. There is all kinds of enforcement and infrastructure, enforcement and regulation and support for open water. There are great statutes, there are great local ordinances, and there are great rules that the DNR provides support through conservation officers on open water. But on frozen water, on ice belt lakes across Minnesota, the problem is the same, and it's horrendous. And I believe that if we can tweak some of the language, we don't even necessarily need an entirely new bill. But a Keep It Clean Ice Belt Lakes bill would be something we'd have our eye on as well. And we're very, very willing and interested to work with legislators to get this into session this year, because as you spoke earlier, this problem is increasing with the number of people that are enjoying our lakes, not just anglers, but people recreating in large groups with RV style wheelhouses. They can stay out there for days and possibly weeks at a time. So we need to keep up with this. We can't be playing catch up to mitigate problems when the lakes are jeopardized. We need to, now we know what the problem is. We have lots of strategies and lots of ideas, and we're working hard. We have the will to get it done. So I hope that we're considered worthy.
Thank you. This really is sort of an emerging issue. We talk a lot about emerging contaminants. This is an emerging water issue. Mr. Hurst's document that he sent me was much more detailed. It described kind of all the details of the changes that would be needed to statute. My understanding from him was that the Department of Natural Resources is receptive in considering this. So we need to have a discussion with them and in order to move forward, but my understanding is they're receptive. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Larry.
I have two hopefully quick comments. One is that across all of these, I think we need to take into consideration that there is diminishing trust in government, and costs are tend to going up for some of these things. I know that, and that we often legislation often is written to accomplish this particular purpose, but doesn't have the sort of checks of good governance associated with it. And it seems to me that anything that was passed today ought to consider the following. And these lists of good governance practice vary a little bit, but when I was thinking of transparency, accountability, equity, effectiveness, and cost. And you say, wow, of course we're trying to get effectiveness, you know, but really, is it measured? I'm thinking particularly of lake management programs. You know, can we say that the things we've done have really resulted in improved lake management? And if not, you know, do we need to change something or do more of it? We need to be able to answer that question, not just say, well, let's throw more money at it and keep going and such. And that's something that should be, there is a crisis of confidence. One's trust in water, drinking water, is related to trust in government, not the quality of the water. Okay, people have shown this in a number of studies. And so we really need to build that up in all these types of legislation. The other in integrated water management, drinking water is going to be a critical issue, and water quantity is going to be a major issue in relation to that and agriculture. We have started in this state some groundwater management areas. Buffalo River or Buffalo Lake, I can't remember which it's called, has been going on for some time. Fairly loose net type of thing. The Twin Cities area, I don't know if it's Met Council or I can't remember exactly the entity because it doesn't even have a web page yet. Or when I looked at it, it didn't have a web page. But we're going to have to do this more integrated water management, as Peter was suggesting. You know, you have to know how much groundwater you're taking out, how much is being recharged, you know, where streams are coming and so forth. And really managing on the basis of a water budget that is continuous. You do it, the example I like to cite because I lived in Arizona for a while is the Arizona Department of Water Resources had these active management areas that they were required to manage. And every 5 years, they did a complete water balance on these. How much is used in agriculture, how much is evaporating, how much is going back into the river, and so forth. And really, you know, Minnesota has a lot more water, but we really do need to adopt a more holistic approach. We can't just, you know, it's been wet, there's been plenty of water, and you know, we may end up with too much water or too little water or very polluted water, but we need to be constantly studying this in real time. And there was actually a third issue that came out of that first one is, and I think Peter mentioned, there's water management all over the place. I tried to diagram this once for a class. I couldn't do it. There are so many. But it may make sense to have a department of water. You know, DNR is geared toward, you know, deer hunting, not really water. MPCA is, you know, pollution control, not really holistically water. Ag, the same thing. And maybe we just need a department of water and start managing things in a little bit more integrated way. I'll stop there.
Larry, this is Jim. I just, to your last point about the Department of Water, there have been various bills in the past. The Minnesota Groundwater Association is just has had approved, and it's not out in the street yet, but it will be shortly, a review of the 1989 Groundwater Act. And a part of that review is a critique and a review of just that topic about water governance and whether it's too decentralized or not enough. And so I'd invite you to take a look at that. And we discussed it at our last subcommittee meeting. There's some stuff in there that's really quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, I was at that meeting, yeah. So I agree.
That's a good point. And it's addressed in some detail in that paper. So thank you. And I'll be in touch with you. Thanks for the comments, and maybe Peter and you and I can talk about some of these issues together. With that, I see Jackie Anderson has her hand raised.
Yes, I am here to speak about issue number 8, and that has to do with watershed districts and a cap that has been on the general fund. It's a limit, and we need to have that addressed. We need to have that be more realistic. And the issue is that we've got small watershed districts and we have large watershed districts, and that $250 cap applies to all of them. And it's just not realistic, makes it difficult for watersheds to do what they were created to do. I do want to just give a brief background on watersheds. There was a brilliant piece of legislation passed back, I think it was the first time in the 50s, and it's been growing since that and adapting, but not a lot. And this is one of the issues, but it's a brilliant piece of legislation. In my particular area, we had lake degradation happening from the transition from agricultural to urban, and it was dramatic. And we tried to work with the framework that existed. Agencies at the state level had a reason or two for why they weren't the ones to go to the cities, the counties. No one was really willing to pick up the stick and help us solve it. So through working with our lake association and the state to try to find a way to around this, we met Bowser, and Bowser told us about the watershed district route. And so after trying all the other avenues, it became very clear that we had to start a watershed district if we were going to solve these problems. And we did that. And that was 23, almost 24 years ago. And to the question of accountability, watershed districts are very accountable. And we have to do performance reports and annual reports to the state every year. In our particular case, we had a number of our 20 lakes that were degrading. And we started our capital projects. There's about 7 years that you have to use to just do the background data that you need to make good decisions. All of this is science-based. And so we were able to start implementing in around 2012, 2013. And today, 10 years later, we have most of our lakes are ready to be delisted. We're just giving them another year or two to prove that it's sustainable. Our local goals are higher than the state standards because we wanted them to be sustainable. So as far as accountability, I don't think you could find a better vehicle than local areas forming watershed districts and using those tools to accomplish their goals. With that being said, getting back to this issue at hand, that is the artificial cap that is put on each individual watershed district to accomplish their stated goals. And I think that we need to go back to the original language, which was a mill rate cap. And that was based on each individual watershed's characteristics, their size, their market values, and so forth. That's the fairest way to do it. Because again, when you have watershed districts that are less than 50 square miles and you have others that are in the mid 100 square miles, you can see that there's a big variety of space that has to be accommodated. But we also have different regions. There's three regions of watersheds. The ones in the metro area obviously deal with metro area. And on the fringes, we're dealing with that agricultural to urban transition that was the foundation of our district. And then you have farming down in the south and the west part of the state, and you have the Red River Valley and all of the flooding issues that happen up in that region. So they're quite distinct. And there's 14 reasons to start a watershed district, all dealing with water. So I just believe that we need to be very supportive of this change. There's two ways to do it. One is to increase that limit to another artificial limit, or it's to take that limit language all the way out of that statute and let each district levy what they need to accomplish their own specific goals. Keeping in mind that the people on the board, like me, we are taxpaying citizens within that district. So we keep a rope on what we're willing to tax our people. But we also have the value of all of the grant dollars that are coming through the legacy amendment. And that has been just a tremendous accelerant to getting work accomplished, a major work accomplished, which would take decades before. We're getting it accomplished in 10 years now. So there is a mechanism, there are mechanisms within the state to have this very forceful and dramatic change in our water conditions if we use them and if we allow them to be utilized as they were meant to be. Thank you very much. I do want to say, other than mine, I want to support what Robin Dwight said about the human waste. That happens on all of the lakes, even the small ones. We've got visitors coming all the time, and we deal with that issue as well. It's not as massive as it is on big lakes like hers. And Dr. Baker, his holistic approach to water, I just wholly support. It would make life a lot easier if we had coordination on this topic. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. And we did have a bill in process last session that related to that, the watershed district issue. And I'd like to be able to review that with you to see if you have any suggestions for that. It had some hearings, but ultimately was, you know, didn't become enacted, but I would like to talk to you about it, and I'll be in touch or send me a note too. So.
Sounds good, thank you so much.
Rob Sipp. I see your hand raised.
Yes, hello there. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for the opportunity and for organizing this meeting. And thank you, Jackie Anderson, for your comments. Those were insightful. And just a couple things I'd like to comment on regarding issue number 25, the culvert replacement program. I know that some of our watershed districts have worked real closely with DNR over the years on fish passage related to culverts and replacing some of those culverts. So I think that's definitely a much needed program and funding. And also I know that the Board of Water and Soil Resources has a conservation drainage program as well. And so I guess the hope would be that those two programs don't compete and that maybe there'd be some collaboration between DNR and Bowser on some of those programs, just so that we're not, you know, causing some issues with our watershed districts when they're trying to apply for grants, and from the standpoint of timing and deadlines. And sometimes we run into situations where projects get delayed, and when you have a lot of funding partners involved, you end up having to do a lot of extra work with making sure that those funding sources stay in line, and that timelines and deadlines are not affected or impacted. But nonetheless, good program. Just want to see some coordination between the two state agencies on that. And then regarding keeping water on the land, I think that was issue number six. And I believe there was about $1 million that is being sought for that. And one thing I wanted to stress right now is that the Minnesota DNR is in charge of the flood hazard mitigation program, and their current known need for flood water storage or water storage across the landscape in the whole state of Minnesota, the need is about $160+ million. And so we've had a lot of discussion at the legislature, I'd say the last 4 to 5 years, about the need, and there continues to be calls for water storage by the agencies, the governor, the legislature as a whole, and individual legislators. And we really need to put some dollars towards that. And we need to be real mindful of how we're using existing programs and not creating new programs. But how can we use our existing programs to meet those needs out there of watershed districts, counties, cities, and other local units of government to store that water, whether it's flood water or constructed impoundments, restored wetlands, whatever the case may be. So just again, there's a big need out there. The last, I'd say, 2-3 years, there's been several million dollars in bills proposed to deal with water storage, but nothing's come to fruition. So we're hopeful that this next session that we'd be able to get a bonding bill in place to start addressing some of our needs, not only for us, but all of our partners and people that we work with and other stakeholders across the state. And then I guess with that, I'd leave it at that. And thanks again for the opportunity to comment.
Thanks, Rob. With respect to the culverts, I know there's proposed funding from the Clean Water Program to address culverts, but I think there's a real opportunity to coordinate the activities of the watershed organizations and MnDOT and the counties as culverts are replaced, so that we ensure that there are those opportunities to allow for fish passages and to store water in some of these road crossings can be incorporated into the work of the various agencies, and so that we don't miss opportunities.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. When there's opportunities out there, let's jump on them.
So thank you. Peter, I believe your hand is up.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I just wanted to come back in the light of some of the comments from Larry and also, I guess, Jackie as well. Returning to the report that we put out in 2020, I should also have said that it was put out through Water Resources Center at the university and can be got through their site if you want to look at it. I think the couple of points that Larry made in terms of governance and in terms of citizen confidence were absolutely key. The delivery of a more integrated approach that we were proposing in the report was through what we described as a governance assessment framework, which looked at various features of governance and asked the question, are they being applied within the agencies, across agencies within the state? So that's the governance assessment framework that is a key part of the report. And as I understand it, I think NDH will be looking further at that in the not too distant future. But arising out of that and the need for transparency is this really important point of increased citizen involvement. And I think we need to look at that much more carefully, much more systematically, because unless we have more citizen involvement, unless we have more citizen confidence, especially in drinking water, then we're going to run into problems in terms of credibility. And then just taking the kind of the issue of integration one step further, and referring to the comments by Jackie, I mean, I think in the report we recognize the real importance of the watershed districts in delivering an integrated approach. But we wondered to what extent there is integration, if you like, coordination across districts, recognizing that the kind of water issue doesn't respect even the kind of boundaries that are put on it by the water district. So again, I think there's a need for at least consideration there. And then finally, coming back to the suggestion that the Groundwater Act is going to look at the possibility of more integration within the agencies. I of course welcome that, given the kind of approach that we developed within the report. One of the things, though, I think we kind of recognized in this area is that there are a large number of political sensitivities that need to be taken into account in moving towards more integration. And so we in fact stop short of recommending any particular kind of integrated agency in the report, merely suggesting that we need more integration if we're going to deliver on good water for all in this state. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. And I think that topic of greater integration, if you look at what the Minnesota Groundwater Association is going to put out there with their analysis of governance in a nutshell after many pages, is what they're suggesting as well, is that their integration could be better and not a complete overhaul of any kind of a system. So thank you. And I see Jackie's hand is raised again.
Yes, I don't want to hog all the time here, but as long as there's an opening, just responding to Mr. Callow's comments about integration, I 100% agree with that. I think that we've got this resource, this unbelievable resource at the University of Minnesota that probably a very few percentage of the people know about. I was just at the resource conference yesterday and found out about areas that I was not aware of and research that's being done. And the issue about in this drought period, one of the conference seminars was on, the topics was on the drought conditions in the northwest area of the state. And water was so severe up there, so limited that it was impacting personal wells. Personal residence wells, and that was a new thing. There were 24 calls on well water shortages from private residences. So we have to do something on a more coordinated basis. We have the tools, it seems to me, at the University of Minnesota, and that specialization in water that only a state like Minnesota really can have. I don't know that there's probably some states out there that do similar things in water, but probably not to the degree that Minnesota does. It's such a rare resource. I didn't grow up here. So coming to Minnesota as a young adult, it was pretty amazing to see water everywhere you look. And obviously there's a lot more underground that you don't see. So I do want to just very strongly support that concept of integration. And I'm just one particular project I want to call out attention to is the St. Anthony Research Center and the work that they do on stormwater and also now lakes and the impact of wake boats, for example, on inland lakes. These are very specific boats that are made to simulate ocean waves, and are they appropriate for freshwater lakes? no one's really asked that question, but the university is studying it because there are continuing and growing complaints about them on especially urban lakes. I'm sure they have impacts outstate as well. But thank you. I just wanted to amplify that conversation about integration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see Mr. Gardner's hand raised, and I just want to mention that yesterday at the Water Resource Conference, Paul and others did they had one of the plenary sessions on the Clean Water Council and the Clean Water Fund, and it was a great presentation, and I think explained a lot of things to people, even water people, who don't understand how important and how good that program works. So, Paul.
Thank you, Jim. I did come in maybe a half an hour ago, so I don't know if you gave broad instructions or guidance to the group, but I had a suggestion for how you may want to winnow this list, if that's all right.
Sure.
So, you know, if I was a legislator, I'd look at this list and say, what is it you're asking me? In some cases, it's just an appropriation. In other cases, there's a relatively short bill, like creating an advisory council or addressing the wipe labeling. In other cases, you've got some things that are ongoing where there already has been an appropriation, like a soil health action plan. And so my question, if I were in their shoes, might be, well, what's big here that only the legislature can do, like setting the strategic direction or new budget priority? And that would help me anyway, winnow this list a little bit to see what your members are going to react to. Because there's some other things on here where I think there's just a need for practitioners to keep talking to each other and to just keep working together and doing better. I don't know that a bill will resolve that unless you use the bully pulpit of introducing a bill just to get people talking, which occasionally works. So that was just my thought.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. And that's why we're here, you know, this list is only one of two, and we need to prioritize and pick out things that are most important and are something that are the purview of the legislature. And we have a survey coming out, which will help us with that. So that's the next phase of this. Thank you. I see Steve's hand is raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Ring, and I'm an active volunteer with the North Star chapter of the Sierra Club, their Waters and Wetlands group. And I just, I have a couple, well, first of all, I'd like to say we really appreciate your big picture approach and looking at the integration and rebuilding water and waste treatment infrastructure. I just had a couple fairly quick comments. One on item number 21, the forever chemicals. I recently saw a presentation by Jim Kelly from the Minnesota Department of Health. And we have become convinced that we really need to put a ban on all non-essential uses, that just looking at food packaging is not enough. This stuff is in pesticides, it's in artificial turf, and it's running off into the waters. The big issue is it accumulates in the body. So serum levels in your blood in the body can be 1,000 times higher than the concentration of PFAS chemicals in the water that you're drinking. I just think if you have an opportunity to meet with Jim Kelly or some people at MDH about this, the EPA is basically recommending zero as kind of their guidance. They'll probably come out with a realistic number here, but I just think that it's time to really get tough on this, that working on just the food containers will not be a solution. And I'd like to reiterate a little bit what Jackie said about boats that create large wakes. We're becoming really concerned about shoreline erosion, resuspension of sediments, damage to aquatic plants, and invasive species from wake boats. These boats have large ballast tanks and downward facing propellers, which if they go through waters that it's estimated anything less than 15 feet deep, that they will disturb the sediments, increase turbidity, re-entrain nutrients into the water column, which then can lead to algae growth. Caribou Lake in Cook County has banned wake boats in Cook County. Lake Minnetonka is really working to try and rein them in a little bit. What we need, the U of M lab at St. Anthony Falls came out with a paper last year that basically found that wake boats 500 feet away would have an energy level in their wake of a normal power boat at 200 feet. But what we really need is for that laboratory or some other lab at the U of M perhaps to really evaluate the impact that these things are having on fish, on aquatic plants, on our lakes. What's happening is people are armoring, or they're hardening the lake shores. They're putting in riprap, they're putting in cement, they're doing everything to protect themselves from these wakes. And that just makes it worse. The wakes then reflect off the hard surfaces and bounce around and hurt their neighbor. This is an issue that I know that the legislature has attempted to respond to this by requiring licensing of powerboat operators. And I just think that if you look at this carefully, that that's going to be inadequate. Thank you for your time. And I hope you can work on these.
Thank you, I appreciate it. And I would like to talk to you some more about that issue and maybe with folks at the hydraulics lab. So folks, thank you very much for your comments. I think we're back to Larry. You're muted though, Larry, so.
Beginning to unmute, okay, there we go. First, kind of an overarching comment. We talk about integrated management of water. I think Jackie, like many watershed districts, they're primarily oriented towards surface water and lakes and such, or streams. And other people are, the Groundwater Association, for example, is probably talking more about groundwater. The two are connected, and we really need to look at both of those in a broad framework. It may be that in one area, you're really more concerned with the surface water. And another area you're really concerned more with the groundwater, but it seems at least plausible that one could develop a framework where you could do have a general framework and then modify to suit your local needs. And the formation of these might be driven by local needs, not forced upon somebody, but just, hey, you know, we're running short on groundwater, we're not going to be able to irrigate our crops. Well, that's one kind of organization. And hey, we had a problem with all these eutrophic lakes. Well, that may or may not be a different organization, but both are issues. And we do have a lot of watershed management districts for the surface water. I've worked with maybe half a dozen of them. And we're just getting started, I think, on the more integrated groundwater issues. And so that was the comment. But just quickly, in response to Jim's comment about PFOS, one of the most successful ways of reducing pollutants isn't trapping it or degrading it or anything like that, but historically, it's been keeping it, banning it, basically. PCBs, DDT, all the organochlorine pesticides, lead in gasoline and stuff, you know, these have led to huge, like 95% sorts of reductions in the environment. It's very difficult to get something like PFOS out, you know, once it's in the environment. But it's probably not that terribly difficult to stop the new inputs over a period of years. So that's just a comment on the history of pollution.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it, Larry. I think, Jackie, you had your hand up too, I believe.
Well, I did by accident, but I do want to respond to what Larry just said. I think it's the right way to go is to have a broader integration on groundwater issues. But districts, just as an example, we did a project on a golf course to use rainwater instead of groundwater for irrigation, and saved 26 million pounds of water use gallons a year. So, you know, you can have an impact on a district-wide basis, watershed district basis, but we typically don't encompass the entirety of a county or the entirety of a city area. So that integration is still very important. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I don't know if we have any other hands up. If you have a comment, you might want to unmute yourself, and we'd love to hear from you. Hearing none, then, I would really appreciate your comments and ideas in any way you want to get to me by email or phone. My contact information is shown here. Tomorrow, there'll be a short survey sent out to help prioritize these issues. I'd really appreciate if you would take a little bit of time. It won't take long to fill that out. And the details on each of these 31 issues are available at our website, which is listed here. Or you can just Google the Subcommittee on Water Policy and go to the October 20 meeting there on our webpage. So with that, one last call for any comments anyone might have.
Just thank you. Thank you for structuring this.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I really appreciate your comments. They're very helpful. And this will help us a lot, and we'll hear more about this. The subcommittee is, until the elections are over, probably won't meet. The members are pretty busy with things. So, but you'll hear from us in the look at my update that I provide, and I'll outline some of the progress we're making there. Otherwise, thank you so much for attending. Really appreciate it, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.